Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
In the news, we've known for a long time about how Wisconsin is watching its young adult workforce leave the state. New data shows how bad it's getting, emphasizing the need for real leadership to make the state attractive for young professionals again. Wisconsin Republicans who played a role in supporting the last insurrection vote against a bill designed to prevent the next insurrection. Billionaires are riding to Ron Johnson's rescue with Willie Horton quality ads. And President Trump, former President Trump, says he can use telepathy to declassify documents. These are not the top secret documents you're looking for. This is Up North News for Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is at the mothership, a ship whose tentacles now extend to beautiful Amory, as well as Richland Center, and to Wausau, of course, as well. And then some of our other shows can be heard in Wisconsin Rapids and Waukesha and Madison. And goodness only knows, I feel like we need the Empire theme whenever I go to you now to ask what's happening with the civic media, you know, as the Empire builds. Dun, 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 dun.
We can use your version for it today, but I can have that in the ready in the future. I can have that ready to go.
And we always have to just hint at it because, again, there's always paperwork and such. So when I say, where are we going next, Luke? You can't really say.
Unless
Trump can use his telepathy and get us that information.
Well, if you take a look at a map, maybe, of Wisconsin, and you've seen where our stations have been popping up, there's some areas that still need to be covered. Maybe that's where we're going next. So I can't give you specifics, but if you want to learn more, you can go to civicmedia.us and you can sign up for updates there and be in the first in the know.
Civicmedia.us, you say?
Civicmedia.us.
Okay, civicmedia.us. Got it. The Brewers beat the Mets 6-0. Brandon Woodruff will pitch tonight as the Brewers go to Cincinnati for a four-game series. Badgers play on Saturday night. Packers play Sunday at 3:25 in Tampa. We have spoken at length about January 6th and the effort to overturn the will of the voters who, you know, cast their ballots in free and fair and accurate elections. And recently we outlined a reform bill that is designed to close some of the loopholes that Donald Trump tried to exploit between November of 2020 and that fateful day of January 6th, 2021. He knew well in advance, as we've learned from the January 6th committee, he knew months in advance that January 6th was going to be a very important day. And he and others worked out a strategy which was predicated in part on the cooperation of Vice President Mike Pence, that he would go along and declare unilaterally that when certain states turned in their certified results, he would just unilaterally say that he didn't accept them, that he thought there was something suspicious there, and either accept some other slate of electors or throw everything into chaos and throw things back to state legislatures to decide things. So there is a bill to close that loophole and to also make it tougher for members of Congress to object to a state's honest, fair, and clean vote total. As we know, Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald of Wisconsin both did. They objected to the fair, accurate, freely cast votes of states and tried to essentially help in Trump's plan to overturn the election.
It was Arizona, correct? I believe
it was Arizona. I couldn't remember if it was Arizona and Pennsylvania or just Arizona. Arizona and Pennsylvania. There it is. From two of those states, basically Tiffany and Fitzgerald saying, your votes don't count. We know best. We're going to object to this. The reform bill now says it can't be done by just one House member and one senator. Now it's got to be, you know, one third of the House or Senate has to object, which is, again, not to say it can't happen, but make it at least a little less convenient for one renegade member to try to throw a wrench into the works. So pretty basic stuff in this bill. I believe it's called the Electoral Reform Act, and it passed the House yesterday on a 229 to 203 vote. Nine Republicans voted for the measure, just nine, though, and none of them from Wisconsin. All of Wisconsin's Republicans, including Tiffany and Fitzgerald, who helped play a role in Trump's attempt at a coup, voted against this reform bill. In Tiffany's words, the process wasn't broken after 2000. It wasn't broken after 2004. It wasn't broken after 2016. It wasn't broken after 2020. And it isn't broken now. Congressman, the system proved how broken it was in 2000 and in need of reform, and opened up the door that you were happy to walk through after 2020. No wonder you've got your foot in the door now to, you know, try to fend off any effort of reforming this. The bill now goes to the Senate, where Ron Johnson, who also was very nearly an active participant in the January 6th events, has said he's not sure how he's going to vote on that. We know how he's going to vote on that. Kia Vakil from Courier Newsroom is up next. You're up north. Vakil's here, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, joins us as he does every couple of weeks from Los Angeles. Nice to see you. How are you?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
I'm good, thanks. We have spent a lot of time on the Wisconsin Senate race this morning, but only because there is just so much material there. And Kia, you've been covering issues in multiple states as they relate to the campaign, including, you know, what Ron Johnson has proposed in terms of Social Security and Medicare. And one of the things I like about your role is that you get to kind of take a step back and dig into some of these stories individually, while others of us are simply trying to keep the fire hose of news from, you know, whipping us around in a frenzy. And so in your case, you actually talked to some Wisconsin folks about what they thought of, you know, Ron Johnson's ideas.
Yeah, I interviewed two seniors in Wisconsin, one in Eau Claire and one in Milwaukee, a few weeks back. Talked to them about, you know, what they thought about Johnson's plan to, you know, he said, I believe it was in August and during a radio interview, you know, that he wanted to make Social Security and Medicare discretionary spending, which is just, you know, kind of a wonky way to say that they should be renewed every year and negotiated every year by Congress, which kind of means it could be used as a political football and put benefits at risk. And Johnson has said similar things in the past. So, yeah, I talked to these seniors, both of whom, you know, one of whom has been getting Social Security and Medicare, one of whom is supposed to get her first Social Security check in about a month. And they both, you know, were not shy about criticizing the plan. They were super, super angry about it. You know, they very much view Johnson as someone who's in it for himself, who cut his own taxes and cut taxes for his donors. And now is, you know, trying to take away the benefits they rely on as they get older. And so they are both just angry. And, you know, there was a poll the other day that showed, you know, most Wisconsin seniors are supporting Mandela Barnes. And I think the two are related.
Oh, yeah. No doubt there. And, you know, we really got a feel for what Johnson was going to be supporting. Again, early on when he was very complimentary of a plan written by Florida Senator Rick Scott. You know, there isn't a Republican Party plan per se, but Rick Scott is the basically the head of the campaign committee for Senate Republicans. And as we mentioned early on, you know, when Johnson said nice things about it, You know, that plan, again, looks at Social Security and Medicare and says, do we really need to keep this around? Let's put it up for a vote all the time.
Yeah, again, exactly. There is a history of Johnson saying these things. Like years ago, he called it a Ponzi scheme. He's always, you know, somehow talking about how all of these actual benefits that help working class people, like Social Security and Medicare, like the Affordable Care Act, like how those are somehow a strain on the budget and the national debt, but the tax cut for billionaires wasn't. So, you know, he's pretty open about where he stands on these things. And, you know, there's this line of, you know, reaction to that of, oh, you're just fear mongering. Like they would never actually touch Social Security and Medicare, but
they'd never repeal Roe v. Wade. No,
exactly.
Would never happen.
Yeah. It's, they would never do that. The last time they had a Senate majority and a House majority, they tried to repeal the ACA and they only failed because of John McCain. And the other, I think it was Susan Collins and Murkowski, but they will try anything you think they won't do. They have shown they will do if given power. So, you know, until they win a majority and don't try to take away serious benefits, I don't think there's any reason to give them the benefit of the doubt.
One more thing on Ron Johnson. We're working on a story that'll publish later today at upnorthnewswi.com that talks about the many judges that Ron Johnson has voted to confirm to federal judgeships. These are lifetime appointments. This is somebody who said about the Dobbs decision, I'm fully supportive of what the Supreme Court did. I obviously confirmed the justices that handed down that correct decision. And so we took a look at some of these people who are serving in lifetime federal judgeships, and a troubling number of them have actions or statements that indicate a record of hostility toward women, minorities, LGBTQ rights. So look for that a little later today. It's actually in the editing process right now. My way of telling Kia, it's about to be in his inbox for him to look at for me, and then we'll look to have that up. But mentioning Ron Johnson and the Rick Scott plan enables me to pivot to the House of Representatives and what I thought was one of the more interesting headlines of the week is. Again, look, technical snafus can happen to anybody, but you would think that the House of Representatives Republican caucus would find a way to not accidentally put the website with their full agenda out and forget to password protect it or whatever it was that we got to see that a little earlier than they planned, I think.
Yeah, we did. And it's, you know, it's nothing new or surprising. You know, it's the same things they've been pushing. It's abortion bans. It's, you know, it dolled up so that it doesn't quite say they want to ban abortion because it's deeply unpopular, but that's what they want to do. 80 some Republicans introduced a bill last week to do that. You know, it's the same thing. It's fear mongering about immigration and crime. And it's not, frankly, it's not much of an agenda. It's just an attempt. It's a PR stunt because.
Well, it's saying the right words. It says, you know, the bullet points are uphold free speech, yeah. Protect the lives of unborn children and their mothers, guarantee religious freedom, and safeguard the Second Amendment. I mean, it is not that these aren't important concepts, but the way that they're just using it really lends itself to the word pablum. There's just nothing there except trying to trigger people to make them think that people are coming after their guns or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, it's just like conservative-based buzzword bingo, basically. which, you know, it's politics. Like, you know, if they want to do that, they have every right to do that. But we have no reason to take it seriously as a policy document. There's nothing in there that, you know, it's a PR play because inflation it's still an issue, but gas prices are way down. And so they can't really run on that anymore. Their abortion stance is horrifically unpopular. You've got Republicans who are, you know, misleading people about their service in Afghanistan and this guy in Ohio who didn't really serve in Afghanistan, it turns out. And so like they are floundering because, you know, they're projected to take the House, but it's trending the other way. And they know they need to do something to try to, you know, hopefully they still want to win. So this is their attempt to change the conversation. And I don't know that it's a great attempt, but it's Kevin McCarthy. So, you know, you get what you get with him.
Well, it's somebody who wants to be speaker. And again, he's looking to be only the next in a growing line of Republicans who think they can control their caucus, including the most extreme members of it. And then they end up getting eaten by them. As we saw with, you know, Paul Ryan and certainly others. And, you know, it's noted that, you know, when McCarthy officially unveils this plan in Pittsburgh on Friday, apparently, that Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia or Looneyville or wherever will be right there, because he is trying to, again, to like you said, accommodate the most extreme elements so that he can be speaker.
Yeah, that's all he cares about. He's craven. He has no morals. And, you know, that's a harsh opinion of mine. But, you know, when you hear him on tape talking about Trump after January 6th, and then just weeks later, he's meeting with him and sort of kowtowing to him and doing whatever he can to help him and obstruct the investigation, that's not someone who craves anything but political power. And like you said, he's catering to Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has embraced the most absurd conspiracy theories. So, you know, and he came up as a sort of serious Republican conservative.
We said that about Paul Ryan, too.
Exactly. And, you know, he may have been that at one point, but whether it's him or Elise Stefanik or, you know, a lot of these sort of formerly, you know, bright, shiny young conservatives, they've gone full MAGA and are now doing whatever they have to build their power.
Yep. We talked earlier about the attorney general's race in Wisconsin and yesterday, how the Republican candidate, Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney, was trying to use Milwaukee as a punching bag, got into a bit of a Twitter war with Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson, because of course here's a state attorney general talking about crime in Milwaukee and thinking the state should take original jurisdiction over Milwaukee criminal matters, which is not what a state attorney general does. But again, it's craven campaigning. But these state attorneys general races are also the kind of thing you're working on, right?
Yeah, I've covered that race a little bit. Eric Toney, you know, it's sort of a classic, you know, especially AG position, but just Republican position of talking about cities like they're these festering cauldrons of, you know, violence and murder. And really distorting the facts. You know, obviously there is crime in Milwaukee and everywhere. Rural counties have crime too, but that somehow never really warrants a government takeover, a statewide government takeover. That's what Republicans are doing, because right now, like I said, gas prices are down. They don't really have a popular agenda. So they're going back to what they always go back to, which is fear about crime, fear about immigrants. And, you know, he's not the only one doing it. It's candidates across the country. Ron Johnson's doing it, you know, calling Mandela Barnes different in advertisements with other black lawmakers, you know, very subtle. I've written about that race. And, you know, Toney is not quite as radical as some of the other Republican AG candidates around the country. You know, he will admit Joe Biden won, which at this point is, you know,
kind of we can expect.
Yeah. But, you know, he's prosecuting voters for using a UPS store as a PO box. You know, if he wants to crack down on crime, that seems like a mistake more than a crime. And, you know, those voters are having their lives thrown in the air because of Eric Toney wanting to appear tough on crime and tough on quote unquote voter fraud.
And it's to in part take attention away, I feel, from the abortion issue, which of course is blowing up in their faces since the Dobbs decision, where again you can't. We've talked about how Johnson's been all over the place in terms of his position. It just wasn't helped at all by Lindsey Graham introducing a national abortion ban. So much for the talking point of letting the states decide it. That was probably the original skunk at the garden party metaphor.
Yeah, the whole issue of, you know, states' rights or states deciding only exists until Republicans decide, you know, oh, we can do this nationally and do what we want to do. It's nonsense. States' rights has only been used to excuse racism and horrifically regressive policies throughout the course of American history, and you know, it's that abortion bill is, you know, horrifically unpopular. In no state is there a majority of people who support a nationwide abortion ban.
And it's unpopular in their own caucus. But yeah, you're right. States' rights are to the national Republicans what local control is to Wisconsin Republicans. Well, all we heard about was local control until they got control of the state legislature. And then local control meant nothing to them. Kiev Akil is our guest, and we'll have more right after this break. You're up north.
From Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We're talking with Kiev Akil from Los Angeles Courier Newsroom, national correspondent, works for various stories for the 8 different outlets of Courier Newsroom, Up North News being one of them. And so as I was making the rounds and looking at what you'll find at the Keystone for Pennsylvania News, the Gander for Michigan News, Iowa Starting Line, yes, for Iowa News. There's in each case, the Lindsey Graham introducing this proposed national abortion ban, you know, really kind of changes or maybe crystallizes the conversation in each of these cases. Like in Iowa Starting Line, you know, the headline is, you know, Lindsey Graham confirms that reelecting Charles Grassley means there will be a national abortion ban vote. And, you know, in the Gander, it again talks about, you know, if Republicans, you know, take charge, that Michigan's lawmakers will be asked to vote on this. And, you know, that's got to make some of them feel maybe a little uncomfortable as we take in these last 6.5 weeks until Election Day.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was quite a choice from Lindsey Graham to introduce that at a time, you know, when every single poll has made pretty clear post Dobbs that there's been, and special election have made very clear there's been huge movement toward Democratic candidates and supporting them and increased opposition to, you know, abortion bans. And so, you know, I think his hope was to try to make his party seem more moderate by, you know, 15 weeks might sound not as bad when compared to 6 weeks, but a ban is a ban. And so, you know, that's right around the time when complications happen too. And so it's a draconian bill, and it varies state to state. And, you know, the headlines vary, like you said, because it's a little bit different in each state. You know, Michigan, they're going to have voters will have the chance in November to vote on enshrining abortion rights in their constitution. You know, I know Governor Evers tried to sort of create a similar pathway yesterday and got shot down by Republicans who clearly don't want it in front of voters because they know what would happen. And yeah, it's unfortunately, you know, right now it is, as Graham would say, a states' rights issue. And, you know, he wants to change that, but in the opposite direction.
Yeah. The amazing thing to me is that, you know, the Evers proposal was your basic stroke of political genius, because they had heard Ron Johnson call for a statewide referendum, which is not a thing here. Ron Johnson should know we don't have initiative and referendum in Wisconsin. We can pass constitutional amendments, but we can't pass or get rid of state laws. And yet there he was calling for it. Governor Evers calls his bluff and says, you know, yeah, let's do that. Let's decide, let the voters decide what to do about this 1849 abortion ban. And Ron Johnson's response is, Tony Evers is being divisive, you know, trashing his own idea because Evers said, sure, let's go along with it and see where we go. It just, again, it tells you that this is a field that Republicans would rather not be playing on right now, which is why they're trying all of the other, you know, possibilities to distract the voters.
Exactly. You know, Johnson desperately wants to talk about anything other than abortion, you know, because he knows his positions. He supported national bans in the past. He supported we ran a graphic the other day on Up North, you know, that he supported the Mississippi law that led to Roe being overturned. And, you know, he desperately, you know, that was his clever way of trying to say, oh, I don't want to have any impact on abortion rights. Leave it to the voters. The voters don't have that ability in Wisconsin, like you said. And like you said, Evers or whoever on his team suggested that, it's a smart idea because you're calling their bluff and kind of showing that he's full of it. And that Assembly Republicans, you know, are as well. And, you know, Johnson's response says what you need to know. He he doesn't want to talk about it, and he's going to do everything he can to not talk about it. He's going to talk about crime. He's going to talk about whatever crazy conspiracy theories of the week are on Fox News. And so, but the point is, it's a huge issue. It's, you know, 1 in 4 women have an abortion in their lifetime. It's not only affecting women who have abortions either. The ban in Wisconsin, you know, there were all those awful stories about women having to wait days as they were bleeding to get treatment because hospitals were afraid of lawsuits. And so it's a human rights ability. It's a human rights issue. You need to have control of your own body is huge. And so if, you know, if Johnson doesn't want to talk about it, that's kind of tough. He's one of the 150 most powerful people in the country, if you include, you know, governors and the White House.
You also have to deal with, or you've been working on stories about, you know, the election deniers, the people spreading the big lie. And before I ask what kind of stories you've done on that for some of our other state outlets, I want to share with folks a little bit from a Washington Post article from a couple of days ago. The headline, Two Republican Women, Two Visions of What Ails America. And what it said, it talked about how Liz Cheney and Harriet Hagman were giving dueling Constitution Day lectures at dueling conservative think tanks. Hagman, of course, won the primary, which is going to unseat Cheney from Congress. But they both appeared on Constitution Day, gave these talks. And of course, you get a feel for what, you know, Liz Cheney had to say. She said, bit by bit, excuse by excuse, we're putting Donald Trump above the law. We are rendering indefensible conduct normal, legal, and appropriate as though he were a king. Again, saying what you think a lot of moderate Republicans would be saying. Hageman, meanwhile, says this in her comments. Over the last 2.5 years, we have been confronted with an existential threat to our very existence as Americans, to our way of life, to our heritage as a free people. Our state and federal government's response to COVID-19 has laid bare the tyrannical undercurrent that moves beneath our feet to be let loose as though it's water flowing over a dam by bureaucratic dictators who seek to control our lives, our families, our businesses, our houses of worship, and our schools. I mean, when we talk about election deniers, when you're whipping people up into a frenzy with that much snake oil, small wonder everybody's going to, you know, slip on it and fall in line.
Yeah. You know, there's all these elite Republicans who in behind closed doors will lament that, you know, election deniers have taken over their party, or, you know, that, you know, Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania is crazy, or Harry, like people. But, you know, that happened because you allowed people like Trump and his allies to spread these conspiracy theories without really speaking up after the 2020 election. And so, like you said, yeah, when you spin that sort of snake oil for 2 years, people are going to believe it. These are people who, you know, people do follow the leaders to some extent. And, you know, people like Mitch McConnell are culpable for people like Harriet Hageman, however you say her name, apologies. And it's really dangerous because now we have people who are running for statewide office, for federal office, that think the 2020 election was stolen, or at least claim they think that, who are running for election positions who tried to overturn the last election, who are spreading really scary, you know, Christo-fascist commentary like that, where it's appealing to people's sense of Christianity and American identity and like painting Democrats and anyone else as the other. We know where that leads historically. It doesn't lead anywhere good. And it's really appalling that Republicans are doing that and no one in their own party is really speaking out against it.
All right, we've touched on some serious topics. So let's turn to the clown show, which is Dr. Oz running for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania against Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. And let's see, I think when last we visited, Dr. Oz was trying to buy groceries and doing just a terrible job of trying to look like a normal person and bragging about how he grew up south of Philly, which south of Philly is New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So what's the last week or two been like in that Pennsylvania Senate race?
Yeah, I mean, something that Oz and his campaign have done pretty aggressively, like Eric Toney, like Ron Johnson, is pivot to fear-mongering about crime. They have run a ton of ads with a ton of money behind them, distorting Fetterman's, you know, record on crime, on criminal justice reform, and making it seem like, as Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, Fetterman serves on what's called a pardons board that can grant clemency or shorten sentences for people who are in prison. And so Oz has, you know, painted this a position where you are basically giving people who you think deserve it second chances. And to be clear, Fetterman is one person and this is a multi-person board. But Oz has decided, oh, you know, that's something we can hit him on. So they've run these really ads that are designed to terrify voters about enormous upticks in crime in Pennsylvania, which is, we're only half true, and tie it to Fetterman and say, he's the reason crime is happening. He won't keep you safe. Vote for me. I'm a doctor. You know, I know how to keep you safe. And first things first, you know, crime is an issue all over the country. Has nothing to do with the Pennsylvania Pardons Board, has nothing to do with John Fetterman. It's an issue across the country in the last 2 years because we had a pandemic. It's pretty simple. You know, Republican states have more crime than they used to. Republican areas have more crime than they used to. But, you know, Oz is, it's the only thing they have. He's a deeply unpopular candidate who's not from that state, who just moved there to run, who's super rich and out of touch. So scaring people about crime is all he has. And it is proving somewhat effective. You know, you've seen the polls get a little tighter. You've seen the Fetterman campaign, you know, issue a memo to donors asking for more money to run ads because they need to combat this because that preys on people's fear and it can work. You know, historically, making people afraid of crime can work. And so, you know, I'm publishing something later today that, you know, kind of seeks to shed light on that strategy and actually talk about, you know, okay, Oz says he's against crime, but he supports a bunch of policies that aren't proven to make people less safe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Fetterman, for example, has said, and, you know, Tony Evers has said something, you know, somewhat similar in Wisconsin, that you can reduce prison populations by releasing elderly inmates, sick inmates, and reviewing some questionable convictions. And any right-thinking person would say that makes sense. If somebody's not a threat anymore or actually never was, then why are we still paying for this? But, you know, it only takes one reoffender to, the whole one bad apple spoils the whole bunch, you know, to make it sound like an idea that we're releasing thousands of murderers onto the streets, because that's, you know, that like you said, that's what works in campaigns. We can explain all day long here, you know, you and I, why you would want to get rid of cash bail and actually keep people in custody based on whether they present a danger or not, not how much money is in their bank account. But, you know, as we're seeing in the Mandela Barnes race with ads being run by Ron Johnson's billionaire supported super PAC friends, crime is a very easy bloody shirt to wave when you get this close to election day.
Yeah, it is. And it's unfortunately can be effective. But, you know, it's, you do start to see some Democrats are pushing back on it, but it's unfortunate that, you know, Republicans just lean into this. Every October becomes fear-mongering about crime or immigrants, and that's also happening. And it's purely to distract from, they want to ban abortion. They want to raise taxes or cut taxes for billionaires. They want to, you know, gut Social Security and Medicare. They do not have a single major idea that is popular. But, you know, voters seem to trust them more on crime because they speak about it consistently and aggressively. And so, you know, I do think that's an issue where Democrats need to, if they want to push back on that, have a more proactive agenda and try to, you know, really make clear that this is nonsense and that, you know, they do take crime seriously because it's a serious issue. And, you know, unfortunately, that is an area where they sometimes cede ground to Republicans and give them this opening to really run these heinous ads and segments.
Yeah. Only got a couple of seconds left here, so I'm going to throw a curveball your way. You're working on so much serious election stuff. What's the first story you want to work on after the election? What's on your to-do list for a story you really want to do that would be more enjoyable than this?
Oh, man, that's a great question.
Good. Consider it homework. Because okay, what we'll do is next time we visit, we're gonna take some time just on that. We need this break. We need a little palate cleanser. Though we do appreciate all the information, Kia. Thank you so much for the time and for the update. And let's start thinking about that post-election fun stuff. We've earned it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, you bet. If you guys want to get our newsletter to follow Wisconsin politics, go to upnorthnewswi.com. Click on newsletter in the top banner. We'll wrap up today's show after this. You're up north. I did not put this one up. You went way back for this one.
I got this one saved in my repertoire.
It's Guardians of the Galaxy 2, right? It's on that soundtrack, I think, or one of the soundtracks, which is how you would have heard it. Although I got to tell you, those are good soundtracks. I mean, some movies come along and you go, they got this right, and they really did. Especially the first one.
Yeah, both of the mixtapes are terrific and very easy. Like, if you're going for a drive or something and you just want good music to listen to and you don't really want to put a whole thought into it, but you want some variety, excellent mixtapes. Excellent. Star-Lord does a good job.
I had a friend who got a turntable and wanted to give a gift and was at a place, what we used to call a record store, and looking at actual records and couldn't really decide because I didn't know what they had from the olden days, and it turns out they had the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, I think both of them there, and that was a real hit for somebody that was learning a turntable again, which, by the way, I don't understand. I don't think the return to vinyl makes that big a difference in quality.
It's good quality though.
You have to really be listening for it. And most of us listen to music just kind of in the background. We don't sit there with the headphones on really tight, trying to catch every little nuance. It's, we're just casual listeners.
I got a buddy who's my age, and he's got a turntable in his living room, and he and his wife, they put on a record usually almost every night after dinner, and they'll sit and listen, or it'll be in the background, but they're anytime we're over and we're just kind of sitting in the living room, there's a record playing pretty much every time, and it is excellent quality music.
Could we maybe introduce them to cribbage? Or
Play cribbage. We do that as sequence. Well.
Oh, you do them both. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We do. We after we pour our old fashioned and we deal out the cribbage hands, we put the radio on in the background.
There you go.
Because again, it's background music. We're talking to each other, and
But you can play cribbage and have the record player on too. It's the same thing. It's background music. It's nice.
I know. I'm just saying. I mean, is the quality really that much different? I say this from the standpoint of I of course learned on this, and so I welcomed the advances in technology. You can't carry a record player around with you, so I liked when the Sony Walkman first came out. So it's kind of weird to be going back. It'd be like watching putting primetime shows on Kinescope. The old scratchy black and white, metallic discs that shows used to be recorded on. Like, is that the way that we want to go? I don't know. Not sure. So we have been talking about different ways that we want to market this program so that it's not just you telling your friends about it, but we're, attracting other folks as well. And so maybe what we need to do is some kind of a recap, at the end of the program, and then we would produce that. We'd put a nice little music bed under it, and we'd air that on all the other shows and try to steal some of their listeners. But I think it could work to just make it part of the show right here, kind of like the old hey, what have we learned today, and kind of go back over it. Or it could be just something that makes everybody turn the dial. We're never going to know until we try. So here's the thing. Should we at some point actually try to do that, like with a music bed and everything, and try to get it in one take? Because, if you're going to go up on the high wire, you may as well take away the net too, right? I'm scaring you, aren't I?
Yeah, a little bit. It's just a lot of pressure, that's all.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I think what I'll do is kind of do a little better preparation for that. But here, we could do a little sample of what it would be like, right? Here we go. Just pulling up some notes. There. We would do something like what you heard at the top of the hour. And if you missed that, well, now you get a nice little recap of what we said. It would go something like, hey, this is Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On Thursday's show, we talked about how we've known for a long time that Wisconsin is watching its young adult workforce leave the state. New data shows how bad it's getting and the need for real leadership to make the state attractive for young professionals again. Kia Vakil from Courier Newsroom joined us to talk about the election campaign races in other states. Newsflash, Dr. Oz is not getting any better at this, and he's resorting to fear tactics. The same fear tactics were seen used by friends of Ron Johnson. Billionaire friends are riding to the rescue, and it is making a difference, especially because Wisconsin's later primary day means the nominees have less cash on hand than candidates in other races. And we also look into whether former President Trump has magical powers. Can he really use telepathy to declassify documents? We revel in a rare Brewers shutout, and we look ahead to the Badgers and Packer games this weekend as well, all on Up North News, 8 to 11 weekdays right here. So something like that. We could do that, right?
That seemed pretty well packaged. Did you rehearse that in the mirror beforehand?
In the mirror? No, this I've learned that this show is turning into one big improv bit. When were you on the speech team in high school or debate team, anything like that?
I did forensics freshman year, got gold, and then retired because I was like, I can't do better than that.
Oh, look at you. I got gold and then retired. Okay. All right, guy. I was a state finalist, 2 years running as well. I've been a regional champ myself. And the coaches, teachers always tried to push me to do improvisational reading or whatever it was, whatever the improv category was. And I didn't want to do that because at the time I thought I was just going to go into politics and, you just give speeches. So I just wanted to give speeches. So I did original oratory. So I'm used to writing, 3,000 words and then memorizing it and not doing the improv. Now this is, hey, you're about to do a promo. There's a minute left in the commercial break. Why don't you crank something out? And so now we do. This is it. By the way, I had a PTSD experience with speeches yesterday. I was asked to be part of a nonprofit group that's putting on an event, and I'm going to MC the event. So they wanted me there for the run through. And they talked about how multiple people are coming to the podium. So we're just going to have one master script. We'll put it in a binder and it'll be up on the podium. And I immediately thought, okay, as long as nobody walks away with it, because I was the speaker at my high school graduation. I wrote the speech. My coaches, teachers, God bless them, made me rehearse it over and over again. And I'm really glad they did, because graduation night came and I'm in my gown, cap and gown, and I walk up there on stage expecting to see the speech there, and it is not.
Oh, no.
And so I did that thing from memory, and I don't think I wet myself, but I sure came close. But then listened back and realized, nailed it. Which, that's the whole point here. So I hope you feel like we nailed it today. If not, come on back tomorrow, where we again will welcome Amory and Richland Center to the fold, along with all of you in Wausau. Have a great day. See you Friday.